Check, check. Testing. Can you hear me?
Boom, TC.
Neil, great show tonight.
Absolutely.
Welcome, everybody, to another edition of the Off the Lip Radio Show, broadcasting live from the beautiful Santa Cruz boardroom right here in Pleasure Point. And tonight we have a great guest, Neil. I want to thank our friend Randy French for organizing this, our
Randy
guest.
He's not going to say anything tonight. He's just going to be in the background.
He's just sipping a little vino, enjoying the show. But tonight we have, in my opinion, a legend in the surf world. Mr. Buzzy Kerbox is here. Buzzy, welcome to the show.
Hey, thank you so much. Pleasure to be here.
We are celebrating the release of your new book, Making Waves.
Making Waves.
Basically, self-biography? Is that what we would call this?
Autobiography.
Autobiography? Autobiography. Yeah. Autobiography. This book is amazing, you guys. This is a coffee table book. Just so you know, tomorrow, which is Monday, at the Hideout Restaurant in Aptos from 3 to 5, Buzzy will be there. You're going to sell books and have books to sign.
And talk.
And talk.
Talk story and show my video.
Awesome. So it's going to be from 3 to 5 tomorrow at the Hideout, which is newly remodeled after their tragic fire. So it's a great restaurant, and it'd be a great time tomorrow. So if you have time, stop down there to get a copy of the book, get it signed, hear some stories, watch some videos.
Yep.
And those are videos that you took and have been taken of you.
There will be alcohol involved, so the stories will be...
They get looser by the minute?
Will they be true or lies?
Maybe both. We don't know. You have to find out on your own. But again, welcome to the show. We're
Thank
so
you
stoked
so
you're here. And you know, we're here in Santa Cruz. Do you spend much time in Santa Cruz? Have you?
No, I've been here once before, passing through. I've never spent much time here at all.
In your entire life?
My entire life.
And what do you think?
I dig it, yeah. Randy was giving me a tour around. It's a cool little town.
You know, swell, though. You can't really see what it really comes to.
I want to see some waves. I was hoping for a little more wave action, but, you know, you get what you get when you roll into a town.
I get it. You know, and unfortunately, like, if we had a big west, you'd just be like, oh, my God, because this place lights up on a west, and right here at Pleasure Point, it kind of turns into about a mile-long wave. It's incredible. So hopefully we'll get a little swell before you leave. And speaking of swell, Neil.
Yeah.
Let's ask the guy how it all started. Because, I mean, the good looks, the modeling career, the contest wins, the big sponsors, traveling the world. How did that all get rolling? What happened?
It was his dad.
Was it your dad?
Right?
Yeah, well, my dad supported me. I worked my way through the amateurs in Hawaii in the amateur contest. A couple competitors in a division above mine was some guy, Larry Bertelman.
Oh, this some guy?
And,
well, are we talking like Menahuni days?
Early.
So how, was, like 10 years old?
Teens, early teens, 12, 13.
Do you see what back up? You got back up because you were born in Indiana, right?
Born in Indiana. Moved to Hawaii when I was 10.
How many surfers do you know, TC, from Indianapolis?
I know a bunch of skateboarders, but not many surfers, yeah.
I think I'm the best surfer out in Indianapolis. I'm not sure, but I think so.
And so
how
does Buzzy Kerbox get from Indiana to the North Shore of Hawaii?
My dad was in the Navy. He stopped in Hawaii, and he was back in Indiana. And he was sick of the weather, sick of his job. A friend of his moved to the islands, and he got him on the phone. And the guy told my dad, come on out, it's great. So he sold the house, sold his business, loaded up the three boys in the Country Squire station wagon. We drove to San Francisco, jumped on the Lurline, and arrived at Honolulu Harbor at Aloha Tower.
And you've been there your entire life?
Yeah.
Have you have a desire to leave? Are you there? Is Buzzy Kerbox there forever?
I'm not leaving.
You're not leaving?
I've traveled around. There's a lot of good things, a lot of different places, but I love the islands. That's where my heart is.
Hmm.
How many Beach Boys albums did you listen to back there in Indianapolis?
Well, when we were living in Indianapolis in the summer, we would drive to Florida for a vacation, went to Clearwater, Florida, and somewhere along the line I saw a Beach Boys album cover.
Yeah.
And that looks, the surfing just looks so cool. I thought someday I want to do that.
Hmm.
And so when we decided to move to Hawaii, the first thing I wanted to do was surf. I went to Waikiki, took a surf lesson. The hook was set.
Hmm.
And the sport reeled me in. I've been doing it ever since.
First brand new surfboard?
It was from my neighbor. It was a Hobie.
A Hobie?
9-foot Hobie, yeah.
Huh. And currently, who's shaping your boards?
I ride Jimmy Lewis boards and Eric Arakawa.
Nice.
Mostly right now.
Eric Arakawa. A Hall of Fame shaper as well as Randy French.
Of course.
Yeah.
Jimmy's making paddle boards, right? Is that what you're riding pretty much mostly nowadays?
Jimmy makes everything. He makes stand up. I'm just about to learn how to wing.
Oh.
And wing foil. Mm-hmm. But Jimmy's been making me boards.
Sailboards too?
He made me mm-hmm. sailboards and stand-up boards, surfboards, longboards, everything.
Currently in your life, how many boards are there?
Well, if you ask my wife, there's too many.
There's a secret shed somewhere?
Yes, there's never enough.
Okay, what's never enough? What do you think?
I don't know what the count is. Honestly, I've got them kind of stacked here and there. I would say probably 50.
50 boards altogether? 50.
That's a nice number.
Randy French board.
I've ridden some Randy French boards back in the day, but I don't own any currently.
What?
Hmm. Well, you're in town. Maybe jump in the shaping booth, Randy.
He's shaking his head.
Retired guy over there.
He's shaking his head.
I did ride a lot of Surf Tech boards, though.
Yes, I wanted to kind of jump ahead a little bit because when I was younger, you did something that just blew me away, and it was your Zodiac tow-in stuff at Log Cabins, I think is maybe. I don't know.
Backyards.
If that's your backyards. Yeah, okay. Were you kind of the first dude to how did you get into that? Did you see somebody else doing it? Did you say, hey, let's do this?
Well, I had a Zodiac, and in Kailua, I grew up in Kailua, and a lot of, on the flat days, we'd go out and freeboard, you know, just tow around on the surfboard. And Herbie Fletcher towed, I think, Potter and maybe Tom Carroll in at Second Reef Pipe, but I didn't see that. That wasn't really what got us started, but Laird, Derek Thorne, and I were windsurfing at backyards a lot, and we realized all the quality of these waves on the outer reef that were going unridden. And I thought, maybe we'll take the Zodiac out there and tow in and give that a try. So I had for freeboarding, I had a little 510 board made just for flying the wake and had foot straps on it. We took it out to the North Shore on a small day. Laird jumped it 10 feet in the air and broke it, and that was the end of that.
Thanks,
one.
Bro.
And that was early on, and then when we started towing in bigger waves, we were just using our regular guns. I had a 9.6 Pat Rawson board, and Laird had one of his Bill Hamilton made for him.
Ever go upside down in that boat?
Laird flipped it once in the early days.
Thanks, bro.
Yeah, thanks.
Jeez, he really took care of your equipment, man. God. Did you get him back? You ever broke any of Laird's equipment?
I don't think so.
You owe him one. So, yeah. You got to call Laird and take care of that debt.
For the people who are listening that don't surf, can you describe surfing a big wave? That's a question somebody asked in, wrote in, and asked.
Surfing it, yeah, you know, it's. I guess the closest comparison would be snowboarding giant mountains, and you know, you climb to the top of a giant mountain and look down. It's completely steep, and you just kind of look at your line. We were towing onto these waves. We'd get towed onto the top of it, look down the hill, and decide if we want it or if it was a closeout. We don't want it, and the moment you let go of that rope, you're descending down a liquid mountain, and the thrill is just unbelievable.
I like that snowboard analogy.
Yeah.
I think that's a good one because
you can relate to that.
Yeah, you close your eyes on a powder day and you do those big arcing turns, and it just feels like, I always said it was like sunset, you know, like a big rampy wave.
In the early days, we got some criticism, you know, you shouldn't be out there. Who do you guys think you are? The undrownables, what are you doing? You know, if you didn't paddle on that wave, you shouldn't be riding it. And we were out there riding them all day long going, well, this is pretty fun. I think we're on to something.
I think we're going to stick
with it. You know, and it's funny because you said about Herbie, and, you know, Herbie was riding jet skis at Pipeline. I'm sure that wasn't real popular, you know.
No, it wasn't real popular. I pretty much stayed out of everybody's way. He'd go out for a little bit and mm-hmm. cruise around. I think people were awestruck seeing a motorized vehicle out in the surf because that didn't really happen before that.
He was really good.
Yeah.
He would get barreled.
The book, going back to the book, show the book up on the camera right here.
We got it.
You kept a scrapbook. This is very much a scrapbook of your life that was kept by you.
Yes.
What made you keep a scrapbook and keep it going? Did you know you would use it in the end as a book or just something you want to keep for your kids or your
I was
for
in college.
Yourself?
I took a writing class, creative writing class, and they said keep a journal for the class. So I kept the journal for the class, and then I thought, well, this is kind of cool. I like this journaling. So as I traveled around, I kept my journal. And I took a lot of pictures, but I used the journal like, you know, I'd buy postcards and pin them in there, tickets and anything that we were doing. So I just kind of kept a record of it, not really thinking, I mean, just for my own purposes. But at the end, I looked and I had a stack of these journals and looking back, I went, I did some cool shit. I mean, someday I should write a book. There's enough stuff, I think, to be interesting.
Who pushed you over the edge to make this book?
Well, my wife told me, you keep talking about doing a book, so why don't you just do it? So I finally buckled down, and it's easy to talk about it, but when you really get down and start doing it, it's a lot harder. So I had thousands of pictures to go through and stories, and to try to boil it all down and make it into a cohesive story. It took a lot of time. I got an editor that broke my balls over every single detail. You said that was 81, it was actually late 82, or, you know, it's just, I tried to make everything as accurate as possible, because you don't want to have something that someone can find that's not correct, and they doubt the whole thing. So we scrutinized over every detail and spelling of everything,
What else is nice is not just your words. You have interviews in there from other people, like Ralph Lauren. He spoke, right? You
interviewed, yeah,
I think there was an interview with Laird.
Ralph Lauren.
Right.
And, I tried to, you know, get their opinions. And Ian Carnes got some of his words. And, threw there. It describes my story as it weaves through surfing from longboarding when I started to shortboarding to pro surfing to stand up to toe in to foiling and just my travels through evolution of surfing.
I like you brought up Ian. Did you hate the Australians when they rolled into the North Shore? Were you totally pissed off?
Well, what's funny is I didn't hate him. I surfed with Rabbit. He was really good. I surfed with him at Pipe, and these guys were good, but Ian in particular and I had I don't know what you would call it. Exactly.
Animosity? He's a big dude. You're not going to sock him up.
He's a big dude, and I remember this one heat at Haleiwa, and I was paddling for this wave, and it was like five waves or four waves in your heat. Every wave, you know, counted. When a good one came, you had to get it. So I picked a really good wave I'm paddling for, and Ian just spun from the inside, spun right behind me and took my wave, and I had to pull back and let him go, and it's like, oh, crap. Oh, okay, that's how you do it. So then he picked his wave starting to go, and I spun around and did it to him. He stood up, turned back, jumped over, bear hugged, tackled me, and we both went over the falls. And the judges didn't see it.
They didn't see it? I was going to say,
there's no interference.
No interference. Yeah, no wonder you didn't like him.
So Ian says that I was always the aggro guy, and I say I was aggro because I learned it from him.
Right. They were aggro, though.
They were aggro, yeah.
So you see, speaking of aggro.
Yes.
I got notes here. My notes.
I'm very impressed, by the way.
Aggro in middle school, right? There was some fights that you were in. Apparently, there was some fights going on in elementary school fights.
Elementary school, I had a fight. Yeah.
Yeah.
A fight? Did you win?
One fight.
How old were you?
Coming from Indiana, I was 11, I think. And somebody wanted to fight me after school, and I met him, and everybody gathered around. And this guy. I had two older brothers, so I wasn't a good fighter, like boxing style, but I was a good wrestler. So he threw a punch, I dodged it, grabbed him, flipped him over on the ground, and he couldn't breathe. And that was
tapped out?
Tapped out right there.
Then the word was out, don't mess with Buzzy. That's classic.
And then in high school, I became friends with Roy Franco, who happened to be the tackle on the football team, probably the biggest guy on campus. Roy and I would walk around together, and after that, nobody seemed to pick on me.
Good move.
Yeah.
How did get the name Buzzy? It was from your mom, correct?
My real name's Burton, and my mom nicknamed me Buzzy from birth, so I grew up just being Buzzy. Nobody ever called me Burton, and my whole life I didn't really know where that came from Indiana, but mm-hmm. I come up with Buzzy. And then my wife now was talking to my mom few years back and said, where did the name Buzzy come from? She said, well, I had a crush on this boy Buzzy in school.
No. Yeah. Classic.
I never told anybody.
You know,
I never knew my whole life.
That's hilarious.
You see what information you get from this book?
This is some big journalism we got going on right now. I'll tell you what. Yeah, I'm impressed. Yeah, that's big stuff. First sponsor
was Locomotion.
Wow.
It was a new surf shop in Kailua. So I had started on the tour in 76, paid my own way around the world tour, and it wasn't even the world tour, it was just some random contests around the world that you could be in the trials. So So I went to South Africa, Brazil, and then at the end of that year, they decided to make that a world tour, and I was number 10 in the world, and I had absolutely no sponsors and no money, and they're planning for next year's tour. So Local Motion was a brand new upstart surf shop in Kailua, run by Rob Burns, and they sponsored me, so I got two surfboards, a t-shirt, and a bar of wax.
Wow, and you were stoked.
Sorry we can't help you with your plane ticket.
Wow. And you were on Victory Wetsuits.
Yep.
With Greg Wade.
Yes.
I worked. Actually worked for Victory Wetsuits for in the late, early 80s. I worked for Victory Wetsuits. Yeah, Greg Wade's a great guy. And you guys had a powerful team on the North Shore during that time.
Yeah, we
did. I think Mike Ho was on there, and it was a pretty amazing group of guys.
Yeah.
And then so let's talk about the big modeling career, because you've had surf covers, and you've had, like, the fashion world.
Hang on. You've always wanted to be like Wayne Lynch. And you always want to be a male model.
Listen, Irish guys are never male models. I'll tell you that right now. I missed my calling. I was born Irish. How'd that all come about?
It's a two-minute story. You got time?
Yeah.
Well,
I was in Australia and competing. And right after the Burley contest, I was surfing at Burley Heads, and I pulled into this barrel. Wiped out, and I came out the back, and there was no tension on my leash, and I thought, oh, crap, I broke my leash. The board's going in the rocks, and all of a sudden, the board just came from underwater and hit me across the stomach like a baseball bat, and I was, like, winded and stuff, but later in the day, it felt all right. It was okay. The next day, we flew to Bell's, and halfway into the flight, I started throwing up, and I used up every little air sick bag on the plane. When we landed, all my friends bailed. Get the hell away from Clearbox. You know,
it's got the plague.
So some flight attendant found me in one of the terminals, throwing up into one of those round ashtrays where there's sand. And I was finishing my last one, I could throw up in there. They ended up taking me to the hospital, and they thought that with the impact that I had severed my intestines, and that they said, we want to do emergency exploratory surgery right now. And I said, well, how soon can I be back in the water? He said, well, it'll be 3 or 4 months. We'll have you back in the water really quick, man.
In no time. I got to eat tomorrow.
I got bells on Saturday. No surgery. Well, you could die. Well, I'll die if I don't make it to Bell. So I stayed in the hospital, and the swelling went down, and I was okay. But while I was in the hospital, I went over to the nurse's station and said, can I borrow your phone? I called my dad, Collect, to tell him I was in the hospital. Back then, I mean, there was no communication. He had no idea. So I finally, for a couple of days in the hospital, called to tell him. And he said, and this photographer, Bruce Weber from New York, called and left a message. He wants you to call him in New York, Collect. And I said, okay. And I hung up the phone and tried to cover my butt from my little thing. Could ask the nurse if I could maybe make one more Collect call real quick. And I called.
She's like,
Bruce.
Sure, just open up that thing again.
Bruce Weber answered in New York. I don't, you know, back then, luckily I caught him at home. And he said, I'm shooting for Vogue magazine. We'd love to fly you out and shoot you for Vogue. And I'm like, are you sure you got the right guy? He said, yeah, no, I saw you in the surfing magazine, saw a picture. And I go, what's the date? And he gave me the date. I go, Bruce, I mean, thank you for thinking about me, but I got a surf contest. I can't make it. So I went to the next contest, bombed out in the first round, and started running. Where's a payphone?
Called Mr. Weber.
Did you know there's more money modeling than there was surfing? Or was
no, I mean, not really.
Yeah.
And so I called Bruce back. I said, actually, I think I can make it. Is it too late? He said, no, it's not too late. So I flew from Australia back to Hawaii, did my laundry, jumped on a plane, flew out to the Hamptons and did my first shoot for Vogue. When the Vogue magazine came out, they used a bunch of shots of me, and I just coincidentally was wearing Ralph Lauren clothes. And then about a year later, Bruce got the Polo campaign, Polo account. They were just doing catalogs back then. He said, I work with this guy, Buzzy Kerbox. He might be really good for your brand. So showed them the pictures of me, and they flew me to New York. I walked into Ralph's office with a look on. He looked at it, checked me out. I walked out the door, and I've been working for him for 40 years.
40 years.
Wow.
Yeah. And at that moment, we were like, wow, maybe this modeling thing's better than this surf thing.
Well, I didn't know. At that point, I had no idea. I mean, pretty good day rate. But I went to the agencies in New York. I said, look, I live in Hawaii. I'm actually too short to be a male model. At 5'9", all the women are taller than me. And they said, well, you're too short. You live in Hawaii. So,
yeah,
you know, thanks for coming in. But once I got the Polo campaign, then a lot of other companies would contact me and I got direct bookings, and they would fly me in. It worked out.
Wow. And have you ever been like somewhere where like you see yourself in like a Macy's window or something and trip out on that?
Well, I flew into New York, and I was in the taxi line, JFK, and there's like 40 taxis coming. And then the one that pulled up to get me has got my picture on the top.
Holy crap.
Salem cigarette ad. I went to the city. They were everywhere.
You were the Marlboro man too?
And billboards and subways and walking around.
Holy mackerel. Do chicks dig models more than surfers?
I think they dig surfer models the most.
So you were a hot commodity out there, huh? You show up all tanned up, the big pearly whites, the chicks are like, oh, Buzzy.
You'll be in Polo again tomorrow, huh?
No, hey. Yeah, if my wife likes it, whatever she says goes. I'll tell you what. When did you meet your wife?
My current wife?
Yeah.
I met her at Turtle Bay at Surf of the Bar. I was doing a talk story.
Mm-hmm.
She was in the audience, and I met her there. And then I needed a place to stay, and Jody Wilmont was running the thing. And she's for doing the talk story there. Turtle Bay was going to give me a room, but the hotel was full. So she said, well, this lady Barbara's got a house, and she may be able to put you up for the night. So I went there with my 10-year-old son, knocked on the door. We walked in and never left.
The rest is history. Wow. All right. Well, congrats on that. And so did she fall for Buzzy the model or Buzzy the surfer?
I'm not sure. You'd have to ask.
Yeah. We need to get the wives on here more.
The
wives always come in with the great answers every time.
Wives, we know we need to talk to.
We know every time. Susie, yeah. Out. I know, Susie Hout. Oh, my God. That's amazing.
So my wife's a photographer, and she came down to the beach to shoot me surfing a pipeline. It's like a 6 to 8 foot day. I came in, and she goes, when you surf, you've got to smile. I go, it's not easy. Taking the drop and pipe. I mean, she goes, Buzzy, you've done two things in your life. You've surfed and you're modeled. Now put it together.
Wow. The manager coming in hot. Jeez.
You described the North Shore in the 60s and 70s being the Wild West. Can you tell us why that was the Wild West?
Well, back then, the North Shore was like the remote end of the island. There were surfers, and that's about it. The nearest police station, I think, was Wahiawa. And if you called them, I mean, they maybe get there in an hour. So it was... it was just like unregulated, uncontrolled, but what kept everything under control was just the people. And the
black shorts?
And back in that day, which we don't have anymore, there wasn't even the black shorts yet, but it was just, you know, the older guys ruled and you respect them and got your waves, and the young guys stayed out of the way. And when you paddled to the lineup to the peak, you're the guy in position, and everybody waited to kind of rotate around. Now it's just a mad shuffle. You know, you sit there for 10 minutes, the guy paddles right around you as the set comes, and I'm got it.
Right.
And so it's all the etiquette of back then is gone out the window. But back then it was like, if you dropped in on somebody, they give you a slap, they give you a punch until you get out of the water.
Oh, yeah.
And now it's like, I'm calling the police. We got that on film. And yeah. You know,
we have that here. The same thing. When I was a kid surfing out here, if you crossed the path, expected your fins to be broken off, and you are sent to the beach. And nowadays, it's just like, I'll sue you. You know, that's the answer you get nowadays. And so it's really has changed. Did you ever get, like, because you have a fairly light complexion, did you ever get yourself into a situation a little sketchy out there on the North Shore?
Well, funny what you just mentioned. Yeah, I was surfing Chun's Reef, and I got near this guy, and he got mad at me, grabbed my board, flipped it over, and broke my fin off, told me to go in. And I found out later... A few years later, it was Craig Sigihara that started Town and Country.
No way.
I got in, my fin's broken. I'm like, Dad, do something. I did this to my fin. He goes, okay, just get in the car. We're out of here.
Like, yeah.
What are you going to do?
Yeah. No, I know, because I one time I was at Hanalei, and
Titus looked at me, Titus from Titus.
Yeah.
I walked by, peachy as gall can be, like straight out of a full suit. He's like, hey, bro, you don't surf today. I'm like, okay. Turned around and I went the other way, you know, like that's how it works, you know.
Yeah.
Those days are kind of gone. It's interesting.
The lineups, just like in high school, you know, I would meet the right people in the lineups and make friends with the right guys, and I was able to avoid a lot of conflict. I mean, I've never been a fighter. I've never had a fight in the lineup. A lot of screaming matches and chase and this and that, but I've always tried to not end things physically. And
right.
And knowing the right guys out there really helped. But I went to Kauai and ran into Titus and Emery and those guys, mm-hmm. I got over there, and there was the Khalid White contest, and Titus had won it 5 years in a row. So I went down and broke the streak.
Ooh, man. Target on your back? Yeah. Was he pissed?
He was a little pissed. But we became friends, and we've been friends ever since. It could have gone either way.
Right. Well, and he's a big surf lesson guy, right? I mean, and you are as well.
Yeah.
You still have a surf school on the North Shore? Is that?
I don't. I had it on Maui for 20 years.
Oh, okay.
Oahu is pretty, there's already enough schools. I don't want to jump in there. It's already kind of packed.
So. Right. It was interesting, speaking of surf lessons, I saw Richard Schmidt yesterday out back. He runs a surf school here. Yeah. And I said, hey, Richie, we got Buzzy coming on the show tomorrow night. And he goes, Buzzy, he goes, oh, my God, that dude's a good surfer. And Richard Schmidt, to me, most humble, best surfer, probably come out of Santa Cruz.
Yeah.
And he had nothing but respect for your surfing ability.
It's nice to hear that.
Yeah, he was super stoked.
For him. Yeah.
And
your relationship with Laird, you're still good friends with Laird, and how did that relationship
still good friends?
How did that relationship start?
Anybody good friends with Laird? Is that the question we should ask?
I spent all afternoon.
Randy's like, I'm out of here. See you, Randy.
Randy's getting more booze.
Randy's like, oh God, don't let me go.
Is Laird gonna hear this?
No, no, of course not.
Promise,
promise. You're totally off the hook.
No hashtag Laird.
No, I met Laird. He was living at Pipe, and he was a little kid, and I'd surf Pipe, and back then there was no leashes, and his favorite trick was to dig a hole, and when guys lost their board, he'd throw it in the hole and bury it, and then sit there and watch him search for it. And he did that to me one time, and then I kind of knew him. He was just a kid, and then we really hit it off and started hanging out after we did a GQ shoot together. It was Bruce Weber shot it. Sean Thompson was on the shoot, Laird, and it was mid-80s maybe.
Mm-hmm.
And we hit it off. I went over to Kauai, and we started hanging out together, did a lot of stuff. Windsurfing at that point really kind of brought us together. We were both doing a lot of windsurfing. And we hit it off and went to Maui and bought property together. And started doing some crazy shit around the world, and then started towing surfing.
One of those crazy things you did around the world was you saw the White Cliffs of Dover right down the street from where I used to live. You crossed the English Channel, right, on paddleboards, not realizing it's the fucking, excuse me, French, but the busiest shipping lane anywhere in the world.
We heard that after, yeah.
Heard a couple horns out there?
There's probably a few ships going by. Yeah.
What were you thinking? Did you just jump on, we're just going to go do this. We're going to paddle to England.
Well, we had earlier that year, we did the Molokai Channel. We were doing a lot of paddle racing at the time, and I had done a windsurfing channel crossing with Tom Stone, another Hawaiian guy from the Big Island to Maui. We did this crossing, and then Laird and I were doing a lot of paddle racing, and then I forget how it came up. We said, let's do the Molokai Channel. So we went over there, and Hans was staying on Molokai at the time, had a little place, dropped us off at like 5 in the morning, and the two of us with no emergency equipment whatsoever.
No radio, nothing.
No radio on a 15 to 20 knot wind day, and we crossed the channel. And so later that year, we were going to Europe, and I said, well, we're going to Europe. Let's paddle the English Channel. So we took our paddle boards and we went and we showed up, and Sylvain was our French friend, was supposed to come shoot the beginning of it. And we were sitting there at the beach in the morning, and he didn't show up, and the tide was good, and our board, we said, okay, we're going. So we parked our little car, jumped in. We had looked at the charts and studied it a little bit. It's a very complex current in there that does a lot of weird things as the tide changes. Yeah. And started across, and about 20 minutes in, we realized that we were in the crosshairs of a freighter.
Wow.
So we turned and paddled back to France, and the thing kind of turned and was still kept like coming. So we turned and just turned, paddled towards England and hold the line.
Wow.
And there the ship passed below us.
Huh.
And it was pretty busy out there. We got about halfway across, and we came across a buoy in the channel and it took everything we had because of the current. They're like, there's the buoy, but the current wouldn't let you get to it. We fought our way, got on the buoy, had a little rest, got out of the water. And then we jumped back in, kept paddling. The ship came up, and they had a loudspeaker and stuff. We're the Dover Rotary Club Lifesaver boat. We've been sent by the Coast Guard to pick you guys up.
Wow. So they thought you were in distress.
Distress. Yeah. What are these guys doing?
On drugs.
And Laird said, no, we came from Hawaii to paddle this channel, and we're going to paddle it. So we paddled away from each other, split it up. And we go, if they're going to catch us, they got to catch us.
Wow.
So they radioed back and got permission to escort us the rest of the way. And so they made, at that point, the current was really strong, and it was like we knew that Folkestone was downstream. That was sounding like a good idea. But they kind of made us head straight across to Dover. We held our line, and Laird got there 20 minutes ahead of me because at the end, I had no idea, but I was becoming hypothermic.
Right.
And as you become hypothermic, I didn't know much about it, but it shuts all your organs down, heart rate, everything, and I was wondering why I was feeling so tired. And the little escort boat, I'm like a half mile offshore, and they're going, you don't look good, you got to get in the boat. My head was like
shaking,
laying down. I could barely paddle. I go, no, I'm getting there. Fought the current, got to the end.
And did Laird give you shit for winning? Because he won? Was he like, hey, dude, you...
Fine, where were you? No. No, but so I get to the shore, and these rocks are covered with seaweed. I went, that just looked like the most comfortable bed. I just wanted to lay down and sleep, and that's what happens
hypothermic.
Mm-hmm. You know? They said, no. As I took us to the hospital, it took my core temperature. I was 88 degrees, and Laird wasn't even cold.
Son of a bitch. God damn. No wonder you don't talk to him anymore. Wow. As you look back on your surfing career, what's the biggest accomplishment? Like what would be like your shining light?
Well, I think winning a couple major contests was big, but I think helping to pioneer tow-in surfing was my biggest contribution, and I think that that's led to a lot of other things of guys towing great waves all over the world, helped them get the best waves they've ever had, and also, in a funny way, it led back to guys paddling into bigger and bigger waves, because once they had the safety equipment and the jet ski standing by, then it was a little bit easier to start paddling into these big waves. Back in our day, to paddle in meant you jumped off the rocks, paddled out, and with two friends, and if something went wrong, I mean, there's not a lot you can do to help
right.
the guy. You know?
Right, there's so, not six skis out
yeah,
there.
Yeah, so paddling into those outer reef waves back then was, I mean, that was life-threatening. But now, I mean, still hats off to these guys that are paddling. It's balls to the walls to mm-hmm. paddle out on these giant waves. But I think our tow surfing helped lead back to paddling into bigger and bigger waves all over the world. So I think that was my biggest contribution.
Still have the drive to surf big waves?
And my balls have shrunk a little bit. Smaller waves.
Drop the scales,
still
changed.
Still doing the trick, you know?
Yeah.
Scales shrunk down. I still love to tow and foil and get out there as much as I can.
Mm-hmm. And we have Mavericks up here. Have you ever surfed Mavericks?
I have never surfed Mavericks. Back when we were surfing Jaws, I mean, we weren't rich. We just, you know, stayed and surfed there, and I wasn't funded to travel around and chase the waves like a lot of the big wave surfers are now. But Mavericks was definitely, it looks like an incredible wave, and it's one that I wish I had gotten to surf.
Well, like Slater's like, oh, wetsuit, I don't want to go, you know, and so.
Yeah, I mean, surfing, I used to come and surf Huntington in a contest here. Cold water, something about wipeouts and cold water just seem more intense, more severe. It seems like you're under for longer. So I can't imagine, you know.
I just think it's funny you're calling Huntington cold water.
Yeah. To me, yeah, it was cold. Woo!
What do you think you'd be doing if you were still in Indianapolis?
That's a good question that I really have no idea.
Yeah, because you left young, huh?
Yeah. Athletically, I tried basketball, too small for football, too short for basketball. So I don't know. Probably wouldn't have been sports. It would have been, I don't know. I'm not sure.
You must thank your dad every day.
I would say you would, might have been discovered for your modeling career right there in Indiana.
I don't know if they would have found me in Indiana.
So are you, have your, did your brothers do any of that? Did you get all the good looks in the family?
My brothers didn't surf or model.
Hmm.
It just beat the heck out of
it. But you all moved to the North Shore together?
We all moved to Hawaii together.
Yeah, oh, to Hawaii together. Okay, gotcha. Yeah. And are they still there?
Both my brothers moved back to the mainland, so I'm the only one that stuck it out.
Wow. And are you the crazy one?
Apparently.
did you enjoy competing for money, or did that take the fun out of the sport?
No, you know, growing up with two older brothers, I was very competitive, and it just made me fiercely competitive. And I surfed for love and amateur contests, and then when there was money, that just made it even more fun. If you could go out and do what you love and make money, that was like the ultimate.
Who was your rival? Who was the guy that, that was...
And you're in a heat, and you're like, God damn it, yeah. Not him again.
Biggest rival growing up from the boys' division through the masters' division, the masters' events recently has been Michael Hall.
Well, yeah, Michael's so good.
Yeah.
Still shredding. Hmm.
Yep, he's still good.
How about Derek? I must have been...
Derek was a little brother at home, you know, like... I'd go pick up Michael sometimes and take him out to the North Shore, and Derek wanted to come along. We'd like, you know, push him out of the way. No, not today, kid.
Yeah. And sad news about Derek, though.
That is really sad.
Yeah, it's really tragic.
I had a paddle out yesterday. I felt bad. I'm here, so I wasn't able to attend.
Oh, it was yesterday.
Yeah.
Oh, wow. Yeah. That that shook here in Santa Cruz. We have obviously a huge connection to Hawaii here in this town, and I know a lot of my friends who were close to Derek were shocked by that. So.
Now you're foiling, correct? Wing foiling?
I'm about to wing foil. Right now I tow foil, and the wing foiling looks amazing. I windsurfed a lot, but I kind of haven't windsurfed lately. And now I've been watching these guys on the wing foils, and it just looks like the most incredible thing.
Is that what Burdish is doing, right, TC?
He does everything. Burdish does. I'm sure he's wing foiling.
He's gonna do that from here to.
He's gonna foil around the world or something. I don't know what he's up to. Burdish is a nut. And when you say wing foiling, that's with a sail, a kite, and you foiling.
So it's a wing that you hold on to. It's not a kite.
Oh, okay. Okay. So you actually hang on to the wing and you clip in a harness with it.
No, you just hold it
the whole time.
Yeah. So I was doing construction, finishing a deck in my house a couple of weeks before I came and. Worked all day and then the evening. I'm going to go work on my wing foil. And I went down. I'm just practicing on the stand-up board. But I'm holding it. You got to hold the thing up. And it's like 15, 20 minutes. And I'm holding this thing up.
Your arms are like.
How long you got to hold this thing up? Windsurfing the mast.
You clip in. Right.
I'm just holding this thing up the whole time. It's some new muscles I got to get used to holding that thing over my head.
So that's got to be one of the hardest, like, sailing, trying to hang on to that kite. Or not even a kite, but the sail.
I think once you're really foiling and under pressure, it was like light wind, so I really had to not only hold it, but hold it up.
Oh,
the wind wasn't strong enough, but I think once you're going and under power.
Kind of hang on it.
And then if you ride a swell, you can let go and just, you know, kind of hold the middle handle and then ride the wave and then lock back into it. So I think as I get better, it will be less difficult.
Check it out, the book.
Yes.
Where can people find the book? Where can people buy the book? Can you describe the book and what it's about?
Can I flip through a few pages, Neil?
Yeah, just to share people with it, because this thing is so, can you see that on there? I mean, it is loaded with photos of your life, basically. This is Buzzy Kerbox's life right here, and there's so many surf shots and family shots and stories. I mean, there are a lot of stories in here. I see there's some hot-looking dude modeling shots. Your toe-in stuff's in here. The Zodiac stuff I mentioned right here, which when I saw this when I was a kid, I was just intrigued. It blew me away that you were doing that.
I mean, so my editor, when I started putting it together, she goes, why do you want to write a book? And I said, well, I want to entertain and I want to inspire. Those are the things I want to do. So I want to entertain people with the stories and inspire people to set goals and go after them. And that's what I did. Some people look at my life, oh, everything came easy to you, but it's when you see the inside that things didn't come easy, like winning contests was not easy because I wasn't as good as a lot of these other surfers, but I had the competitive drive to want to beat them. So I had to work on all the little things that I could. I started paddleboarding, doing races, because paddling was so important in surfing back then when you had to catch a lot more waves in the heat. So I worked on everything I could to compete with these guys and set goals, and I'm going to win one. And it was like, you know, the full dark horse story, because nobody ever expected me to win. There were Mark Richards and Dane and Michael and Berleman. And,
right.
You know, Sean. I was the underdog. So, but nothing more exciting to me than be the underdog and come through and win on the biggest days of the year. That's
yeah. Like, well, it's funny, so, because what you just described is like you took it seriously. When everybody else was like staying up till 2 a.m. having a great time and showing up.
Some of that too.
So the halo's got a little rust on it. Okay. Got it. But you know, but a lot of guys weren't taking it that seriously. Now guys are training, you know, they're on the elliptical, they're doing yoga and all this other stuff today.
Well, in the early days, you know, Sean Thompson, for example, just one person was on tour. Came from a wealthier family, had a credit card, always had rental cars, hotels, everything all set up. Coming from Hawaii, we were like on a super tight budget, so like four of us would, you know, get a room together, all go in on a car, and, you know, fight over the bill at dinner, and, you know.
Who were those four guys mostly? Who, like, the who
Hans
were?
Hans and Michael and I traveled a lot together.
Mm-hmm.
And then one of the Aussies, and I got along with the Aussies too, Rabbit would sometimes hang, so the those guys.
And we kind of talked a little bit about how Mike Ho was your like nemesis surfing in contests. Looking back on that, who was the king of that line, of that level? Did Michael win the most or did you win the most?
I had some really good head-to-head battles with Michael that I won, but if overall he probably beat me more times.
Damn
it. On the way to win the World Cup at Sunset 78, I had Michael, and I had a stubby seat I'll never forget in Australia. We were staying together, and then we got our heat together, a quarterfinal heat together. So it was like...
You took him down? You won the stubbies, though, right? Didn't
I got third.
Oh, you got third. Yeah. Okay. What is your biggest win? Would it be...
The Surf About 1980.
Okay, that's the one I'm thinking about. You still got that trophy?
You know, they had a big trophy. Oh, here are the trophy. And then after the cameras, they take it back and give me this little tiny one.
What?
So I have the little
bastards. The mini cup.
Well, who was important for you? Who told you needed to come to Northern California to the places you've been to here and tomorrow at the Hideout, by the way, the Hideout tomorrow. I think you're going to Monterey, right? You're going to Monterey?
Yeah.
So who said you've got to go to California to sell that book?
Well, you know, this book was, it was more of something from the heart that I did. I went to some publishers. I got it mostly done. Went to some big publishers trying to get it published so I could just, you know, walk away from it. None of the publishers would do it, so it was a self-publishing.
Oh.
Which meant I ordered 1,500 books, and now here you got to sell them.
So mm-hmm.
I don't want to sell them on Amazon and bookstores. So it's just been a very personal thing, and I thought, I've got to take these to the people. So last year I planned, right after the book came out, I said, I'm getting a motorhome and I'm going to go to California and I'm just going to make a trip of it and go take it to the people and just grassroots.
Right, that's
cool. You know, have talk story nights and sell the books. And
yeah. Where can people buy the book?
Yeah, David, is there an online spot?
I have my website. You can buy it from buzzykerbox.com.
Perfect.
So it's my home operation. It's me at home, and I sign them and
put a stamp on the envelope and get rid of them.
Priority mail them out to people.
Looks like it's $39.95.
Yep.
This is a coffee table book. This is a quality. I love the feel of the cover. It's got this amazing suede almost
that
feel to
one
it.
One of the thousands of details that we had to like figure out. What's the texture? What's the like making the book that?
Well, he nailed it. Yeah. It feels. Quality and the binding is amazing on it. It's
the size, you know, what size, and I wanted big, of course, but then it's so heavy you can't travel around with too many. So came with this size and just made it so that you could take one around.
Is this Jaws on the cover?
That's Jaws on the cover.
And this photo of you at Jaws, how how did you decide that this was going to be the cover? Because that has to be one of the hardest things.
Well, yeah, that's, you know, doing all the layout and then finally deciding on the cover. And my wife is really tasteful and stuff. So we looked at a bunch of different picture options to try to, it had to fit just right and have room for the writing. And this was the one that just seemed to fit. Ironically, this was the one picture I had. Somebody gave me the slide. I had the slide, and I don't know who took it.
Wow.
I don't know.
Really? So yeah. So if there's a photographer out there who says, hey, that's my shot,
yeah.
Does he get a free book?
He gets a free book.
All right. Yeah. That's awesome. But they gave you the slide. That's really cool. And so if there's somebody that you had to thank besides your wife for this book, who would it be?
Is
there somebody else that was helped, like, what's mentoring you?
No, my editor, Lori, was really good. I when I first started to do it, I worked with Ben Marcus. We kind of wrote through the whole thing.
Of course, the one and only Ben Marcus.
Yeah, I thought it's a surfer book. Mm-hmm. Ben's the guy. But we wanted to make it more understandable for everybody. So I got an editor that doesn't surf, and so we tried to define surfing so that anybody could understand surfing more and a surfer could still appreciate it.
So the original Nat Young, the Australian Nat Young, not the Santa Cruz Nat Young,
yep.
Put you on the cover of his book, is that correct?
History of Surfing, yeah.
Right, and why did he choose you? Did he ever tell you?
No, he didn't tell me why, but he just said, we want to use your picture on the cover, but we have to reverse it because to make it fit the format. And I said, do it however you want, as long as I'm on the cover.
And how many covers have you had? Magazines and books. How many do you have?
Around 20.
Okay.
Different things.
Which is a lot, TC, right?
That's a lot. I mean, yeah. I mean, that's a lot, especially because
it was
surfing and surfer, and there's only 24 covers a year between those two.
Yeah.
So if you got one, I mean, if you think of how many years Surfer has been around and how many covers there were, it's very low.
No, right. Back in the 80s when you got on the cover, I mean, that was like the coolest.
And a big check.
Yeah.
That was how you got your...
No, I didn't get a check.
You didn't get checks back then?
Nothing.
What the heck?
Nothing.
What?
They might send you one free copy. Thank you.
Wow. When I was younger, like all the kids here in town that had sponsors and had photo incentive, you were responsible for cutting out that picture.
If you had incentives.
If you have incentives,
the magazine themselves, they didn't.
Right. But through incentives to your sponsors.
Yeah.
You were responsible for that. So if you got a cover, you know, your major sponsor, you might get $1,000 for that or something.
Yeah, I didn't have any photo incentives when I was getting covers. And then after, it's like, oh, yeah, photo incentive. Then I never got another cover.
Damn it. Who was coaching you back then in your surf career? Was there somebody that was, like, helping you out?
You know, back then, surfing was just an individual thing. You just, there was no videotape to study. You just had to watch. And every, you know, few months, there'd be a surf movie. And you'd go watch that surf movie and try to, you know, learn a little bit.
Emulate.
Watch and watch the other guys in the water.
Hmm.
But I never had a coach or trainer. Just tried to do it all myself.
Are you still the kid from nowhere, or are you the kid from somewhere now?
It depends who you ask. But yeah, when I would travel around, Dane and Bertelman, Michael, or like look Hawaiian, and they go, where are you from? I go, I'm from Hawaii. And they look at me, but where are you really from?
Wow. That's funny.
Indiana, they're like, might as well have been nowhere.
That's hilarious.
So you're a kid from nowhere.
Yeah, so I guess I still am.
Huh. This book, how many stops are you making on the book tour?
Well, I've got 400 books left.
Okay.
And in the last week, I've sold 50. And so I've got 5 more stops scheduled, and I'm headed as far south as it takes till my van's empty.
And when the van's empty, you're going home?
Mention the website again. Kirby?
BuzzyKerbox.com.
Yeah, BuzzyKerbox.com. You can order the book. And are you signing the books if people order them online?
Yes.
Okay, so they'll be signed?
Yeah.
And could they request, like, can you sign it to my mom?
Yeah,
or they
absolutely.
Can write something like that, and
personal.
You'll take care of it? Yeah, personalize it, which is really a nice thing as a gift.
Because,
I mean, for $40, this is an amazing gift.
Well, it's 50 online.
Oh, it's 50 online?
Yeah.
Okay, all right. So 50 online. That includes shipping, right?
Yeah.
Okay, that's why. Perfect. Well, that's great. And it's really cool. I love how you did the detail of the map in the background on this cover. It's really a nice job you did on this. I think this is Randy's copy, right?
Yeah.
Right. And you signed it for Randy?
What did I say to him?
He's a kook.
I know what you should do,
Randy.
Just,
hey, big kook.
Jesse, I don't know what you should. What if you're available tomorrow night? But maybe Randy, maybe we should come tomorrow.
Three to five.
Hideout, and we can get some perspective from some of the people who are buying some people in the crowd buying the book.
Right.
You know, it'd be kind of cool to hear from the people that are interested.
Well,
in this
anybody watching, I think we don't get a lot of buzzies in town. And so the fact that you're here and you folks that are watching, it's really the food's amazing. The cocktails are great. I can't wait to hear you talk and show your video and take advantage of it. We've been locked up in our houses for a year, and to do something cool like that and having you here. And like you said, you've been here one time in your life.
You know, I kind of, for doing the book tour, I was inspired by Donovan Frankenreiter, who's a friend of mine. I was in Aspen. And I saw his tour bus in front of the Belly Up, so I knocked on the door and went in and talked to him and looked at his schedule. It's just like he just plays every night. I go,
yeah.
How do you do that, Donovan? He goes, I love it. He
yeah.
loves
yeah.
it. And I'm loving taking this out to the people. It's really fun to get in front of the crowds and answer questions and see people. And people are a girl last night. It's like, in the middle of my rotary phone, I had a picture of you surfing. So every time I dialed, you were like,
right.
You know,
it's
like,
well, and
all these stories of stuff that I never knew. You know, growing up, I'm in Hawaii. I don't know who sees what I'm doing or what they think, and I'm getting out there and meeting people, and it's really fun.
And I'm one of those people. I mean, as I was growing up, I read every magazine. I went to every movie.
Yeah.
And the first time I saw you in your Zodiac on the outside reefs,
going,
I was so inspired. I was like, wow, this is gnarly. And then and you hitting the road and meeting these people that you actually affected has to be rewarding for you.
Really fun.
That's so cool. That is great. So, again, everybody who's watching, tomorrow, Monday, at the Hideout, it's in Aptos, right parallel to the highway on the frontage road from 3 to 5 o'clock. You can pick up a book for $39, get it signed. It makes a great gift, and maybe order some appetizers. Randy, are you going?
Randy will be there.
Randy French is going. He'll be there. And you actually did some work down there at the Hideout, right, Randy? In fact,
I helped him with their first Redwood Bar.
The Redwood Bar. Unfortunately, it burned in the fire,
what
right?
What are we
going
to do to get him on the show?
Well, we're working on Randy. A future show, Randy will be in
he's
here.
He's the last person left.
We're working on it, yeah.
If I accidentally dropped in on somebody like 20 years ago, you don't need to show up tomorrow and tell me about it. Just
Buzzy,
it was an accident.
I
thought you were going left.
Buzzy, there was a show we did with Sean Thompson.
Oh, yeah, Sean Thompson. Oh, the guy called in.
The guy calls in, and he goes, Mr. Thompson, it's been 35 years, but I wanted to talk to you. I wanted to make amends. We're at Ventura at C Street. And I'm 50 yards from you, and I dropped in on you, and you caught up. Remember that?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. And Sean remembered.
Sean remembered.
He did. He remembered. From like 35 years ago. He's like, you're the guy. It's an awesome show. You can go to offthelip.com, and you can listen to that Sean Thompson show.
Sure.
It's amazing. Yeah.
I wanted 30 years to make amends with you and apologize for dropping in.
It's amazing. And so, Neil, are we good?
Yeah, we're good.
That was a great show. Buzzy, thanks, man, for coming on. Yeah,
that was really fun.
It's great having you here in Santa Cruz, hoping you enjoy your time here. Tomorrow, the Hideout's a great spot.
Yeah.
I hope it's very successful. Again, everybody, show up, buy a book. Maybe we can empty that van, and you can fly home tomorrow. So Randy French will be there. Neil, our next show.
I'm going there tomorrow night.
What's going on with the Off Lip Radio Show coming up?
I forget. You know my memory.
Oh, jeez. Okay, well, just...
John Sisk and Ken Whiting from the board...
Santa
John
Cruz
Sisk.
Boardwalk?
Yeah, we're doing some business.
We're doing some business. Yeah. All right, that'll be a great show. Buzzy, thanks for coming on the show.
My pleasure.
Yeah, and everybody here in Santa Cruz is stoked you're here. Your book's amazing. I love it. I'm going to get a copy for myself. Tune in to our next show. Thank you, everybody on Santa Cruz Waves. Tyler Fox, thanks for letting us be a part of the Santa Cruz Waves. And Neil, great show.
Good show.
Good night, everybody.